wife and kept her as his queen. She sighed. And do you find that romantic?
Don't you?
Of course not. The man slaughtered all those young virgins and was never punished for it. That's outrageous. Elise slumped, tilting her head.
Cat, it's not a true account.
But even the most fantastical fiction should reflect real life in some way. Why was there not an uprising? Surely the fathers of those girls would have conspired revenge. Elise pushed my brocade dress aside and plopped down on the bed. I'm sure this is why Ichabod gave the book to me and not you. He knew I wouldn't try to rewrite it. She had a fair point. It was a valuable piece of literature. Who was I to pick it apart?
You're right.
I held up my hands in surrender. Maybe we can read some of the stories together.
Only if you promise not to crusade against each one.
Cross my heart.
She gazed upon the treasured item.
Where is Persia?
A very long way from here.
I hopped up, took her hand, and tugged her to a standing position. The fires are ready. Then we hurried outside to the kettles and racks. Elise snipped the string while I attached it to the hooks.
I want to hear about your dinner with Ichabod, she said.
I assure you, it was not as perfect as yours, I teased.
I never said mine was perfect.
You're forgetting my stupid little brothers were there.
They dominated every conversation, badgering him with questions about school. Will the assignments be difficult? Will you allow us some playtime? And Dirk had the audacity to ask, will you be adding a whipping post?
I blurted a laugh. Ichabod prefers bargaining over beating. Her eyebrows rose.
You must have learned a great deal about him.
Just that he's unconventional in his thinking.
And a breath of fresh air.
She helped me lower the first group of strings into the wax.
And that's what I love about him, she uttered.
It's an admirable trait.
But there was so much more of Ichabod to discover, if I weren't sailing away.
We placed the strings onto the rack. Did he bring one of his stories to share? She asked.
Yes, he's a marvelous writer.
Her mouth curved into a sly grin.
A tale of debauchery?
I laughed, remembering that look on old Henny's face. Hardly. Father would have booted him right back to Connecticut.
And very nearly did.
We set about, dipping another set of strings. The heat from the kettle warm on our faces. I gazed out across the field, imagining Ichabod by the brook, journal and pencil in hand.
I wonder how many stories he's published.
I don't know, she answered. But I want to read them all. Or even better, lie next to him, my head on his shoulder, while he reads them to me.
I admit, it did sound like a cozy pastime.
We dipped more and more, watching the wax grow fatter. Tilting her head, she mused, I wonder why he doesn't have a wife. That came as such a surprise I nearly dropped the candle wicks.
Elise, he's barely older than us.
She continued as though she hadn't heard me.
Maybe she died?
What makes you think he should be married?
Because he's perfect.
I'm sure if we looked hard enough, we'd find plenty of flaws. My thoughts turned to that book of witchcraft that he read like a Bible.
Still,
I bet he had his pick of girls back in Hartford. I could see the cogs in her mind turning.
Surely one would have snared him by now.
I picked up a snippet of string and wrapped it around her finger. Maybe he was waiting for you. She admired it like it was a gold band.
If only that were true.
Once the dipping was done, we snipped the wicks and bundled the hardened candles into boxes. I had not told her about Ichabod coming to teach the slave children, or that I'd be assisting him. It would only hurt her, I told myself, several times. As we gathered our things, Elise suddenly stopped. With squinted eyes, she peered across the field.
Katrina, is that Martin's horse?
She was gazing in the far distance, where Brom's cabin sat. I stepped onto a stool to see. Indeed, it was Martin's horse, and Brom's was hitched next to it.
I wonder why Martin isn't fishing today.
I wondered the same, and even more so, why Brom was not out overseeing the farm. What business did they have in his cabin on a late Monday morning? The wind picked up, and a sudden gust prickled my skin. "Maybe the waters are not right for fishing," I offered, though deep down I knew that wasn't true. Chapter 9. Father and I had one thing in common. We always woke up grumpy and cross. Father would huff and growl, communicating with gestures. I, on the other hand, would plod through the house, seeing through blurry eyes. The only person with a smile was Simon, ready with our tea and breakfast. But on this particular Wednesday, I broke my droopy routine. Simon tilted his head, eyes narrowed.
"Something's got you mighty cheerful this morning, Miss Katrina."
"I'm just well-rested," I lied. Truthfully, I'd tossed about, a thousand things whisking through my mind. Mostly, the joy that this would not be a typical day stuck within these walls. I stirred some honey into my cup. "Ichabod comes this afternoon." Simon shuffled some pots off the stove.
"He's a very generous soul."
I gazed out the kitchen window. "Yes, he is. And thankfully, we're having lovely weather."
"Thankfully,"
he agreed, suppressing a grin. "Is he thinking..." "It's just that I'm interested in Ichabod's teaching methods." Simon still held back that grin.
"I'm sure they'll be most interesting."
I stirred in some cream. "The children will benefit greatly."
"It is a blessing,"
he said, now smiling broadly. I finally had to ask, "Simon, what is so amusing?" He lifted the teapot.
"I was just thinking that you might want some tea in that cream and honey."
He poured.
"Miss Katrina," he said with a laugh, "it's going to be a wonderful day."
I prepared by baking 2 dozen apple dumplings and filling a jug with cider. These were not meant as rewards for good work, but to fill the children's small bellies beforehand. After all, hunger is a gnawing distraction. So is clock watching, something I tried not to do. Ichabod arrived about 3:30, juggling 4 hornbooks, a sum book, and 2 other texts in his arms. Even though he'd spent the day teaching the village children, his smile was as pleasant and refreshing as if he'd just awakened to a day of sunshine.
"I would have been here sooner, but Gunpowder had other plans for me. It took some persuading to get him out of the schoolyard."
I peeked out at a pig-headed beast, which at the moment was using the hitching rail as a scratching post for his gray speckled breast. "Surely Van Ripper has another horse he could loan you."
"Not unless I want to ride the plow mule. Besides,"
he nodded back toward Gunpowder,
"he's shown me parts of the valley I never knew existed, nor could ever find again."
"You don't have to worry about getting lost around here," I said. "As long as you hear the river, you'll find your way back." His eyes softened as they met mine.
"That's assuring."
"Those eyes." I quickly turned my attention to his supplies. "Let me help you with some of these." I lifted the 2 texts from his grip, then saw that one was a volume of Aesop's fables. "No!" Panicked, I quickly opened his coat and shoved it under his arm, out of sight. He blanched, folding to the side as he wrangled the remaining items so they wouldn't fall. He managed to grip the fables with his armpit. "Sorry," I said, reaching to steady him. He flinched at my touch. My face burned ruby hot. "You must think I'm a lunatic. Or worse. Honestly, I didn't mean to be so brash." I slowly reached out and took a couple of the hornbooks from his grasp. He slipped Aesop out from under his arm. "No, please, don't apologize. It's just that..." His cheeks reddened slightly as he gave me a shy smile.
"I'm quite ticklish."
"Oh, why do I find that so endearing?" I covered my mouth, holding back a giggle. He rolled his eyes.
"I know. Go ahead and laugh."
I wouldn't, but I wanted to. He held up the book, turning it front to back.
"So tell me, why are we so eager to censor Aesop?"
"Because if Father sees it, he'll skin your hide and bury you in Smet's root cellar." His face opened in a jest of shock.
"Then to save my hide, I should explain its purpose."
"They're stories," I said.
"But they'll be used for critical thinking. I'll read a short tale, and then have the students try to determine the moral. It stimulates the mind."
I shrugged a little, conceding.
"That sounds reasonable." "And," he added. I think the children will be inspired to know that Aesop himself had been a slave. I exaggerated a sigh.
Ichabod,
you are one brave man. Our eyes held for a moment, then a smile lit his face. Why don't we test that with the children? He gently took the texts and hornbooks back from me and shifted them to his arm. So, where is our schoolhouse? This way. I led him into the kitchen, where I'd placed the plate of dumplings and a jug of cider into a hamper. I'd brought out some quilts, too. Since the children had no benches or desks, I felt these would ease the discomfort of sitting in the gritty dirt. We carried everything to the spreading maple where Ichabod would teach. The soil underneath it had been loosened and padded, ensuring each child had a proper writing surface. No doubt a deed Simon had seen to. I'd barely spread the quilts when the children came marching up from the slave quarters.
There were 11 instead of 7, all led by Lita, a strong-willed child of about 12. After getting them seated, she turned to Ichabod.
I invited some others. I didn't think you'd mind. And I sharpened some extra sticks.
She held them bundled in her fists.
Excellent, Ichabod said. How many did you sharpen?
I was sure this was a question to test her mathematical abilities, but Lita looked up at him like he was the village idiot.
One for each of them.
Clever girl, he praised.
He then brought out a ledger, quill, and a small pot of ink.
I'll start by taking down your names.
He looked at Lita.
My name's Lita, and I already know how to spell it.
He turned the ledger toward her and offered her the quill.
Would you like to write it in for me? I could help you.
A moment of panic crossed her pretty face. Then, just as quickly, she regained her composure.
I don't want to get ink on my fingers.
Very well, he said. Would you spell it for me?
In this she took great pleasure.
L-E-T-A.
Thank you, he said, suppressing a smile.
Each child in turn stated their name, except for Elijah, a boy of about 6. He had the energy of a wild hare. He sprang up from his spot and raced in a circle, giggling and taunting us with,
"You can't catch me!"
As he went for his third turn, Lita marched up and snatched him by the suspenders. He sprang back onto his bottom with a whop.
"Sit down, Elijah!"
She kept his suspender straps clutched in her hand so he couldn't make for another escape.
I think it would be safer for all of us, Ichabod said, plucking the boy's stick from his hand, if young Elijah here used his finger as his writing tool.
I gave each child a dumpling and a cup of cider, while Ichabod informed them as to what they could expect from these sessions. They seemed eager for both the food and the knowledge. They shared the hornbooks, running their fingers along the carved alphabets. Ichabod explained the difference between upper and lowercase letters. Then, starting with the letter A, they practiced writing in the dirt. Some of the children were more skilled, so I took the slower ones aside, helping them to catch up. I found that I enjoyed teaching. I never thought I'd have the patience for it. Their sharpened sticks served more than writing. Ichabod used them as counting tools to teach addition and subtraction. He also formed shapes with them, a square, rectangle, triangle, and had the students look around and name objects and structures that held those geometric shapes. I was mesmerized by his calm voice and patient gestures. The lessons ended with him sharing the fable of the fox and the grapes. To bring more life to the story, he stood, holding up a dumpling, while small Elijah jumped and jounced, trying unsuccessfully to seize it. Though Ichabod asked them to determine a moral, they tried concocting ways in which the fox could obtain the grapes instead. They had that weary fox pulling carts, riding horses, and waiting for lightning to strike. As the discussion continued, Elijah still exerted great energy trying to grasp that dumpling. Then, with a frustrated grunt, he drew back his foot and kicked Ichabod hard in the shin. As a manner of reflex, Ichabod bent over and clutched his knee. Elijah plucked the dumpling from his hand, stuffed the entire thing in his mouth, then plopped down on the ground, arms crossed. The children and I bellowed with laughter. Ichabod sat down, rubbing his shin. He leaned toward me and whispered, "That one will grow up to emancipate them all." After bringing about order, he told them, "I'll leave two of the hornbooks with you. When there is time, Practice your letters and numbers, and I'll check your progress next week. If you still have your head...
Lita mumbled under her breath.
Lita! Do not speak out of turn, I scolded. But Ichabod held up his hand, indicating he'd allow it. He kept his attention on her.
I've heard the tale of your famous horseman. Tell me, why do you think he might take my head?
She rolled her eyes as if the answer were simple.
Because he whacked off the first schoolmaster's. It's like arithmetic. He's doing his own subtraction.
So you believe there is a horseman?
Of course there is. I've seen him.
I felt a hitch in my chest.
Lita, if this is some game...
It's no game, Miss Katrina.
I saw him the other night.
I worked to keep my breathing normal.
When?
When I went out to the outhouse to do my business. Coming out, I saw him up there.
She pointed to a hill near our house. I turned to look. The trees upon it instantly rustled, as though they knew that I watched.
He was holding that sickle of his, and his horse pawed the ground like it was fired up, ready to chase somebody down.
Ichabod arched a skeptical brow.
Why didn't you run?
Again, she gave him that, are you thick? Expression.
I did. You think I just stood there like a fool?
He didn't come after you? I asked.
No, ma'am. He was more interested in what was going on in there.
She pointed to the house.
Ichabod rubbed his chin. What night was this?
I knew the answer before she said it.
Sunday.
It was the horseman I'd sensed.
You're very calm about this, Ichabod said. Weren't you frightened?
Scared to death!
But I have this. She reached under her collar and produced a talisman hanging from a string. It was the same type of charm that Simon had made for me, the one that was now protecting Garrett. Ichabod lifted the talisman into his hand and stroked it lightly with his thumb. His expression clouded as he studied it.
Lita tugged it back, like his touch might wear away its power. He sat back and sighed.
Forgive me, Lita, but I've never been one to believe in ghosts.
Yet you believe in the black arts.
She shrugged.
You'll believe it when your head is rolling away from your body.
This earned some giggles from the other children, who'd been listening with wide eyes. My mind churned. If it was Garrett he sought, then why had the horseman come here? I held back my anxiety as best I could. The children had enough burdens without me adding further distress.
Well, Ichabod rose, if I'm still in possession of my head next Wednesday, I'll see you all then. Class is dismissed.
Rather than hurrying off, Lita took charge, seeing to it that the children shook out the quilts and folded them neatly. The cups were emptied and placed in the hamper. She ordered each child to say thank you, then led the way, marching them back to their quarters. I crossed my arms against the chill as we walked back to the house. I could not let go of my fear. Ichabod watched me from the corner of his eye.
You believe in this horseman, too.
I turned quickly, gazing up at him.
I'm so sorry. Someone should have told you before you made the decision to come here.
He lifted a shoulder.
I'm not sure that would have swayed my decision.
Don't you get it? There is a horseman. He murdered Nicholas Devenpeck.
But where's the proof?
The council has proof, and Nicholas was not the first. Apparently, the horseman follows a pattern. He still looked doubtful.
That doesn't prove these murders were carried out by a ghost.
Ichabod, he is real. I know. I've seen him myself.
I realized I was practically shouting. I lowered my voice when adding,
and not just me. He's marked a dear friend, leaving him tortured and driven to madness.
Our eyes held, and 1,000 questions crossed his face.
I know it sounds insane, I said.
No, it doesn't.
He gently clasped my arm.
You're trembling. Let's get you inside.
When we reached the back door, the smell of baked fish greeted us. Simon was busy in the kitchen, tension framing his eyes.
I hope all went well with the children.
Extremely well, Ichabod said. They are all bright and receptive.
I set the hamper on the sideboard and removed my shawl. I can attest to that. Simon's shoulders relaxed as he continued paring potatoes. I began removing the cups and placing them into the tub for washing.
I kept my eyes down, trying to steady my grip. If Garrett is marked, why was the horseman here? Another chill rippled through me. Ichabod gazed at me, his face a mask of concern.
Katrina, I must be getting back. I promised Van Ripper I'd help.
Yes, I blurted before he could say more. I'd feel better if you're inside before dark. Simon paused and said,
Thank you kindly, Mr. Crane. I'll be sure Isaiah's there on Saturday with timber and tools.
Perfect. Ichabod shifted his books from one arm to another. I managed a weak smile. I'll see you out. We stepped onto the piazza, the veil of evening unfolding before us. Gunpowder, still hitched and waiting, greeted us with a rolling snort. I followed Ichabod to the hitching trail. He took a moment to place his books in the saddlebag, and then turned.
Katrina.
Please, please be careful. My eyes cut to the hill and back. Ichabod glanced over his shoulder.
Don't worry.
How can I not? He took my hand in both of his.
There is no mistaking your fear. Trust me. I do believe you.
He stroked my fingers as though they were treasured porcelain. I placed my other hand on his, and we stood there, speaking through touch. The night air grew colder, yet the feel of him warmed me.
I will be careful, he promised,
bringing my hand upward and kissing my fingertips.
And if Gunpowder remembers he's a horse, I shall be back at Van Ripper's in a flash.
I reached over and stroked the beast's neck.
He's in your hands, I murmured into his flickering ear.
Ichabod loosened the reins from the hitching rail. The frisky horse seemed eager to go, making Ichabod's mounting a clumsy task. Once in the saddle, he looked down at me with those haunting green eyes.
Take care, Katrina. I shall see you soon.
Then he was off. I watched until he was no longer in sight. I stood there for a bit, gazing down at my fingertips, still tingling from the brush of his lips. But I finally snapped out of my daze by realizing I was dawdling out in the biting cold without a cloak or shawl. I turned to go inside and,
dear God,
my breath caught and my knees buckled. The horseman was there, on the hill, sitting tall upon his steed. His silhouette loomed larger and more malevolent than when I last saw him, like he bore all the hatred of hell. His scythe rested on his shoulder, the blade touching the sky like a silver crescent moon. My blood drained as I stood frozen to the spot. Then, like a slap,
Ichabod!
It could be no coincidence that the horseman had appeared twice during his visits. It was suddenly clear. Ichabod had become the target.
I must warn him. Hitching my skirts, I flew around the house, racing toward our stables. My heart thundered against my chest as my unsteady legs carried me.
Ichabod! Fortune was on my side. One of the stable doors stood open, and a lamp flickered within. I ran all the faster, hurrying for my horse. As I hastened through the door, an arm reached out and grabbed me. I immediately flailed and screamed.
Whoa, Katrina!
It was Brom, struggling to steady me.
Let go!
I cried, fighting to break his grasp.
Calm down there, little filly.
I had no time for his childishness. The horseman is out there. He gripped me even tighter.
What are you talking about?
The horseman! He's here!
I frantically squirmed within his hold. He loosened his grip, but still held on.
Nonsense.
I just saw him on the hill. He's after Ichabod. I must warn him.
Settle down. You only imagined it.
Brom, we're wasting time. Release me. Why was he always so impossible?
He still held on.
Katrina, take a breath.
Let me go!
I sank my teeth into his hand. He whipped back, startled.
I have to warn Ichabod!
Trembling, I slipped the bit into Dewdrop's mouth and tightened the bridle. No time for a saddle. I stepped onto the stall's railings and flung myself onto her back. Brom gripped the bridle strap, stopping me once again.
And if the horseman is out there, what's to keep him from taking your head?
He's not after me.
He glared, eyes tight.
Be reasonable.
I snapped his hand with the reins.
Let go.
He flinched again, surprised, but kept a firm hold. He studied my face, then let out an exasperated sigh.
I'll go instead.
Now I was the one stunned.
What?
I'll go for you.
He put his hands on my waist and hoisted me down. But... Brahm strode out to his waiting horse. I followed, skeptical. Why would you offer to do this?
He snorted a laugh. Because Baltus would not forgive me if I let you ride away.
Naturally, it's all a joke to him. And what will you say to Ichabod?
He mounted Daredevil and took the reins. Nothing. I'm not that stupid.
He has to be warned.
I'll follow at a distance, making sure he gets to Van Ripper's in one piece.
Brahm, please be careful. He gazed down at the bite mark on his hand.
It seems I'm much safer out there.
With that, he spurred Daredevil and sped away.
Chapter 10.
My thoughts whirled as I sat at dinner, my teacup trembling in my hand. With every blink, the profile of the horseman appeared, haunting me. Ichabod. Brahm. How could I have been so selfish to let Brahm go in my place? Father paused from his meal, genuine concern on his face.
What's wrong? You look pale.
He touched my cheek, feeling the icy numbness. I wanted so badly to tell him what had happened, but he was already keeping me prisoner. If he knew about this, I wouldn't even be allowed onto the piazza. It's nothing.
Well, you did spend the afternoon with those children, and they carry all manner of disease. I hope it isn't the grip.
I wish it were that simple. It's just that I was thinking about Mr. Devenbeck. Have any measures been taken to rid us of the horseman? Any talk of him rising again?
That's not your concern. The council is taking care of matters.
It's everyone's concern. What actions have they taken? The crow's feet on his eyes creased deeper.
Leave it.
I can't. What about old Brower and Cornelius Putnam? What business did the horseman have with them? He gnashed his food like it might escape his mouth.
Leave matters to the men.
Father, I'm set to inherit this house. Should I leave matters to the men when that day comes?
By then, you'll have a husband.
My patience was wearing as thin as his. Are you so sure? What's protecting you from the horseman? His chewing slowed. He gulped down his meat, then said,
You're familiar with the Andre tree?
That was not what I'd expected to hear. Yes. The Andre tree stood just outside Sleepy Hollow. Its gnarled and twisted limbs gave it a vile, unearthly look. Many have said it sprouted from hell, and that its roots served as ropes, binding sinners who did not obey the devil. But the tree was also a landmark, connected to the tragic story of Major John Andre, a British sympathizer who assisted Benedict Arnold during the Revolution. It was under that tree that the Major was arrested as a spy. What of it? I asked. He picked through his peas, stabbing three with his fork.
It was concluded that Brower and Putnam were somehow involved in Andre's capture. The Hessian rose to punish them.
I considered it for a moment. That makes no sense. Andre was taken some 3 years after the Hessian's head was blown off.
Yes, but it's believed that a Tory lived in our midst and conjured the horsemen to enact the revenge.
Were that true, there were other matters to consider. Then what of Nicholas? Why would the Hessian come for him? Father gave a shrug as he sliced into his beef.
Perhaps he'd been a British sympathizer during the war. We knew so little of him.
Something as dire as that would not have escaped Henny Van Wart. Who could possibly be the conjurer? He cut his eyes to me, then went back to sawing his meat.
If we knew that, he would already be swinging from a noose now, wouldn't he?
So there is no solution? No defense? I asked. Father sighed.
At present, our only defense is prayer.
But there has to be something.
Enough, Katrina. I'm weary of talking about it.
But what of...
Enough!
I sat back, collecting my thoughts. None of it made sense. Nicholas was a God-fearing man, as was Garrett. Why would God turn a blind eye to them? And what of Ichabod? He'd only just arrived. What could he have done to attract the wrath of the horsemen? A chill swept over me. If someone is controlling the horsemen, did the conjurer also send him to my window that night? I placed my napkin on the table. I've no appetite. May I be excused? He tapped his fork against my plate.
You haven't eaten.
I'm not hungry. He paused, huffed, then nodded. Springing up from my chair, I hurried to my room, locked myself inside, then sat, staring out the window. For how long, I could not say. I waited and watched until my eyes would no longer stay open. It was well after midnight when I was awakened by the sound of Brahm's horse, thundering back to his cabin. I could only assume that after Ichabod's safe return, he had spent the rest of the evening at the River Song. I relaxed upon my pillow, knowing that for tonight, both of them were safe. I wrote a note to Ichabod, then tore it up. An hour later, I wrote another. I destroyed it, too. After the third, I was questioning my own sanity, as well as the horseman's purpose. I sought out Brahm, but he was doing everything in his nature to avoid me. It was a little game he played when he knew I was anxious for something from him. With him, it was always about control. On Friday, I tried to tempt him by having Lita deliver a basket of apple muffins. I did sincerely want to thank him for his selfless act. Lita soon returned to the house. "Mr. Brahm said he wanted to know why you didn't deliver 'em yourself, or was you afraid he might bite you back? I wish I'd bitten him harder." "When next you see Mr. Van Brunt, tell him that I would have delivered them myself had I known where he was. He has not kept me apprised of his work schedule." Obviously, Lita had easier access to Brahm, because she reported back immediately. "Mr. Brahm said if you'd look out the back window sometime instead of the front, you'd know that his schedule changes with the seasons. And being that you're gonna inherit this farm someday, it might do you some good to stop being a dreamer and pick up a hoe." "Huh. If I picked up a hoe, it would collide with his skull." "When next you see Mr. Van Brunt, tell him that when I inherit this farm, I intend to sell it and travel far from the vicinity. And where will he be then?" It wasn't long till Lita was back on our doorstep. "Mr. Brahm said he most likely be booking passage with you, and for you not to lose your pretty little head over it. Then he told me not to bring him no more messages." "Ah!" I stamped my foot, my blood rising. Lita looked at me with wide eyes. "Please don't make me bring any more, 'cause last time he was holding a pitchfork. I hope he falls on it." I took a deep breath to tamp down my ire. After all, once Martin's ship was ready to sail, it was I who'd have the last say. "Thank you, Lita. There will be no more messages." I poured her a cup of cider, then went about my day. Father was gone the next morning. Some business in town. I had business of my own, telling Ichabod about spotting the horsemen. Around noon, I chanced harnessing Dewdrop to my cabriolet and riding to the schoolhouse. Ichabod would be there with Isaiah, building the cellar floor. I also brought along a hamper of food, knowing that working men sometimes forget to eat. I had to hitch Dewdrop to a tree limb because Gunpowder had laid claim to the rail. He stood, nodding, and pacing side to side. Most likely a trick to loosen the reins, but it seemed Ichabod had grown wise to it, taking great care to wind and secure them. I doubted his students were as contrary as his horse. I strolled around to where he and Isaiah were working, pausing briefly to watch Ichabod as he sawed a wooden plank. It rested on two trestles, and he steadied it with his knee. Perspiration beaded his forehead, curling the tips of his ebony hair. The top buttons of his white cambric shirt were unfastened, affording me a view of his glistening chest. I could barely pry my eyes from him as I admired his slender frame. Elise's devilish word immediately sprang to mind. Delicious. His face opened in surprise when he spotted me. "Katrina." I put on a smile as I carried the hamper forward. I must tell him. He laid down his saw and wiped his face with his sleeve.
"What have we here?"
"You'll both need to keep up your strength." I set the hamper on a block of wood. "So," I snapped back the cloth covering it. "I brought sausages and beer." Isaiah paused. They both beamed.
"Watch out, Isaiah," Ichabod said. "She just might spoil us."
Isaiah wiped his hands on a rag.
"Miss Katrina is too kind."
We moved away from the splinters and wood shavings and found comfortable spots on the grass. I took out the sausages, along with three tankards and a jug. I poured out the frothy brew. "Enjoy."
They both drank politely, taking moderate sips. I, preoccupied with how to tell Ichabod of the horseman, tilted my mug to my lips and took two generous gulps to loosen my nerves a bit. Ichabod cocked a brow.
Isaiah, remind me to never challenge her to a drinking contest.
Isaiah's face split into a grin. They both drank heartily. I cut into a sausage without taking a bite. I had no appetite, and no idea how Ichabod would react when I relayed to him what I'd seen. He'd said he believed me when I pleaded the horseman's existence. But had he really? He watched me curiously, sensing something was wrong.
No appetite?
Not since Wednesday. I forced a smile. After guzzling my beer, I thought I should show some restraint.
Ha! Around me? Prim and proper makes me terribly uncomfortable.
I gripped my mug firmly. I'll try not to extend my pinky. The sky had turned an iron gray, and the air smelled damp and heavy. I glanced over at the timber, then cast my eyes upward. How do you plan to protect all this wood from the rain? He feigned panic, pressing a finger to his lips.
Shh, don't say that word.
I couldn't help but smile. Honestly, Ichabod, I'd never figured you as the superstitious type. He wavered a finger.
I never take chances when it comes to rousing the devil.
Isaiah discreetly spat three times on the ground. Ichabod spread his arms.
You see? I'm not the only superstitious one.
Especially around here, I said. The Hollow thrives on superstition. There isn't a person in the village who doesn't put his coat on right sleeve first.
The right sleeve is the right sleeve, and the left sleeve is the wrong sleeve, he joked.
That drew a chuckle from Isaiah. I wished I could feel as light-hearted. I pointed to the sky. Yes, but about the... He wilted like a wet rag.
You might as well say it now.
Rain, I whispered.
Should the... He pointed upward. Inevitable happen. We'll load the timber into the wagon and cover it with oilcloth. But I predict there will only be a thin afternoon drizzle.
Are your predictions always correct? He held up his mug.
Don't place any wagers.
Can't you simply store the wood in the cellar? He took a sip, foam lingering on his lips.
There is more preparation to be done inside. Carrying the planks in and out would just be added work.
Then have Isaiah bring it back this afternoon, I said. We'll store it in our barn.
Oh, no. I've imposed enough already.
Believe me, Ichabod, a corner of our barn is not an imposition. And besides, we're all anxious to see you succeed. He slanted his head, looking genuinely touched.
With this type of generosity, how can I fail?
Isaiah shook the last drops of beer from his tankard.
Miss Katrina, would you like me to rinse these dishes for you?
No, leave it. I'll take care of it.
Then I better get back to the chore,
he said, rising.
Beat the...
He grinned widely and pointed up to the sky.
Thank you kindly for the meal.
You're welcome, Isaiah. Once he was out of earshot, Ichabod blurted,
Tell me what's wrong. Why have you really come?
I saw the horseman again. He pushed aside the plates and moved next to me.
Where?
At the farm, just after you left. I was terrified he'd go after you. We both started when a crow swooped down and perched upon the hamper, inches away. Its black, beady eyes observed us, and it cocked its head like someone listening with intent. My heart rose to my throat.
Ichabod waved his hand toward it. Shoo!
It remained there, challenging. Then the first sprinkles of rain fell.
Come, Ichabod said, wrapping his arm around me and helping me into the dark cellar. Watch your step. Some of the stones are loose.
He lit a candle and set it on an old three-legged table.
Tell me what happened.
I relayed everything. Spotting the horsemen, sending Brahm, father's speculations, and added, The council believes the horseman does not rise on his own.
Do you believe that? He asked, his face masked with worry.
I peered into his gentle eyes. I don't know what to believe, but I'm frightened for all of us.
That much I can see.
He swept back some strands of my dampened hair, his fingers lightly brushing my neck. It sent a new tremor through me. Ichabod, what should we do? He held my gaze, his eyes expressing trust.
I'll speak with Van Ripper. Perhaps he can tell me something.
The council is very secretive, even with matters of civil concern. I pulled my shawl tighter around me. And you're not even supposed to know about the horsemen.
He shook his head. How could I not? The town empties at dusk. The villagers shut themselves away, and most every door has a cross or hex sign painted on it. Perhaps you should put one on the school.
No. I'm here to teach the children, not frighten them.
So you do intend to stay? I thought surely this would drive him back home.
Katrina, there is danger everywhere. You can only run from it for so long.
We'd moved so near, his breath brushed my cheeks. I considered his words, realizing it was not just the bustle of Hartford that he'd wished to escape. We stood close and quiet as the rain tapped the earth above us. His whole presence enveloped me. He smelled of woods and nature and sweat and spice, and I could practically taste it.
I promise you, I will not leave.
He leaned ever closer. I did not move. I did not breathe. I closed my eyes, and just as his lips touched mine,
Katrina?
A voice called down. We parted quickly, composing ourselves.
Katrina!
It was Brahm. Oh God, I've been caught. What will he tell Father? I stepped out of the shadows so he could see me. He was wearing his tricorn instead of his fox cap, and his coat was beaded with mist. His face was sallow and lax as he descended at a leaden pace. Had he seen? Brahm,
Ichabod greeted.
Brahm held up a hand to silence him.
I've come for Katrina.
His eyes, clouded in copper, gazed at me like never before. If he were capable, I thought he might cry. Brahm, what's wrong?
It's Garrett,
he said.
He's dead.
Chapter 11.
The room blurred, and my knees gave way. Brahm placed his arms around me.
Come, let's get you home.
He carefully led me up the steps. If Ichabod said anything, I don't remember. I don't even recall looking back at him. All I could see was Garrett's face before me, his expression of torment. Brahm tethered Daredevil to the back of my cabriolet, and together we rode back to the farm. We sat in silence, hearing only the metrical clapping of the horse's hooves. Chills traveled through my cold and clammy skin. I could barely swallow or catch my breath. It wasn't until we crossed the church bridge that I found my voice. And though I already knew the answer, I still had to ask. How did it happen? Brahm seemed reluctant at first, then explained.
The notary woke this morning to find Garrett gone. He'd left him a note saying he was leaving. When de Graaf went looking for him, he saw smolder in the distance. Instinct led him. He found Garrett's body lying in a circle of charred grass.
My stomach knotted. When you say he found his body, Brahm's eyes cut to mine.
His body, not his head.
I leaned forward and buried my face in my hands. Why Garrett? Why him? Once we'd reached home, I went straight to my room and silently shed my tears. Garrett, my sweet friend, dead. God only knew who the next victim would be. I spent the next few days stewing, wondering. The horseman's mark upon Garrett's window was evidence that he did not kill at random. But how did he choose his victims? What had each one done to invoke his wrath? These questions continually haunted me, though I imagined the council was as flustered as I. On the day of the funeral, the rain had ceased, but the gray veil lingered. While Garrett and Nicholas had both been murdered by the horsemen, their funerals couldn't have been more different. Garrett was a child of the Hollow. Our grief for him ripped the heart, leaving an emptiness in its place. Brahm and Martin served as pallbearers, pacing grimly to the grave. The procession was slow, as there were many in attendance, and the rain had made the ground sodden and sluggish, adding to the drudgery. Elise and I hooked arms, helping each other along. With a handkerchief clutched in her gloved hand, she wept in shallow sobs. Once there, the four of us stood, staring down at the oak coffin. It was as though we were still children, innocent and awed, yet disconnected without Garrett standing alongside us. The Reverend spoke of the glory of heaven, yet I felt no relief or joy. The only solace I took was that Garrett could now be with his mother, who had died when we were six.
His grave was dug alongside hers, joining them both in heaven and on earth. Once the service ended, we faced the long walk back, along with the realization that Garrett was taken from us forever. Brahm and Martin each offered an arm and escorted us to the church. But as we turned to go, I cast my eyes across the cemetery, toward that grave hidden beneath the weeds. My heart was black with hate. If I could, I would dig up his headless bones and feed them to the wolves. There was food to be had, but no desire to eat. Most everyone stood, murmuring their sorrows to each other. A line had formed to offer condolences to Notary de Graaf. I swept over and took my place. There were many statements of "I am so sorry" and "he will be missed." Once I approached, I took his hand. I truly don't know what to say. I loved Garrett so much. His faded eyes found mine, and he leaned toward me and whispered,
"I must speak with you privately, after the service."
I nodded, somewhat aghast. Had Garrett told him of my visit behind the house? When I turned back, Brahm was there.
"Come."
He guided me back to where Martin stood. Elise had joined her family, still waiting to speak to the notary.
"You should sit," Brahm said.
I'd rather stand. Somehow it felt wrong to relax. Brahm placed a hand on Martin's shoulder.
"Watch after her while I get her some tea."
I started to tell him I didn't need watching after, but he'd already hurried away, and he was being kind and civil for once. Martin fidgeted with his tricorn, turning it corner to corner. In a whisper, he asked,
"Did you manage to see Garrett last Sunday?"
"Yes." I recalled his tortured face. "Go to safety, and tell no one of my plan to leave." Why had I agreed?
"Did you speak to him at length?"
he asked. He only lingered long enough to urge me away. He stepped closer.
"Did he confess anything?"
"Confess?"
"I mean, did he give any explanation as to why the horsemen chose him?"
"None." Making sure we were not overheard, I anxiously asked, "Martin, how much longer?" He brushed back a tumble of hair from his face.
"Soon, I hope. And rest assured, those further arrangements have already been made. I won't rest assured until I'm away from this godforsaken place."
"What have you arranged?"
"Not here. I'll come by tomorrow and explain."
He'd barely finished his sentence when Brahm returned with the tea. I took a sip, finding it as bitter and acrid as this awful day. "I have no taste for this."
"You should drink it,"
he said. "Really, I'm fine, though far from it." As I handed it back, someone stepped behind him.
"Pardon me."
It was Ichabod, dressed impeccably in black. My heart hitched at the sight of him. He seemed awkwardly out of place, having never met Garrett.
"I wanted to express my condolences. I understand he was a dear friend."
Brahm stood taller, chin out.
"None closer."
"If there's anything I can do," he offered, "please do not hesitate to ask." Though these last words were meant for all of us, it was me at whom he looked. I blushed, thinking of our near kiss. "That's very generous." Our eyes lingered for a moment. Then he said,
"I'll leave you to your mourning."
Though I couldn't voice it, I wanted so much for him to stay. I truly wanted to go home and rest, but I had agreed to speak with Garrett's father, and it could only be here. Never again would I set foot on his harrowing property, and the sorrow locked within. Eventually the crowd thinned, and I crossed over to where he stood. "You wish to speak with me?" He took my arm and guided me to the door. He appeared so small and frail, a man left to grieve alone. Once outside, he led me away from the remaining mourners. He stared down at the ground, his breath shallow. I worried for a moment that he might collapse.
"I know that you defied me."
He did not look up.
"You went to Garrett's window and spoke with him."
I was a cornered mouse. "But I had to see him, to understand."
"You knew of his encounter with the horseman?"
"Yes." A silver tear fell from his eye.
"You knew, and you didn't tell me?"
"I was told in the strictest of confidence. I begged him to report it, but he refused.
The notary wept, and coughed, and wiped his eyes with the back of his hand.
I will live in wonder the rest of my life.
As will I. He feebly dug into his pocket and drew out Simon's talisman.
Here. This was found with his body. It was kind of you to offer it.
You keep it, I said, closing it into his palm. Perhaps it will do you some good. A sob escaped him as he nodded.
God be with you, Katrina.
With his head hung, he trudged back to the church.
Chapter 12.
Fear and grief leaves one achy, so I chose anger instead. Anger directed at whoever controlled the horseman. If I could discover him, I'd have his head. And then there was the waiting. Martin had promised to come by. I was itching to know what arrangements he'd made. But it was also Wednesday, Ichabod's day to teach the slave children. My eyes were on the clock. I was worried they'd show up at the same time. To my relief, Martin arrived a little before 3. Again, we stayed on the piazza so as not to be overheard. We must hurry, he said, grappling in his pocket. There was an unusual urgency in his words, and his hands trembled. He withdrew a silk cloth, then, holding it in his palm, unfolded each corner, revealing a thin pinchbeck bracelet with 6 miniature clay roses.
Take this.
Why? What's it for? He clumsily fastened it to my wrist. It was lovely, but explained nothing. I thought he'd come with news. Martin, what is this?
A way to cover our tracks.
I looked at him in question. How could a piece of costume jewelry make a difference? He moved closer and met my eye.
Listen carefully. When the time comes, I'll send word. You are to go to Greenberg, where you'll be met by Peter Bottoms.
I drew back as though he'd bit me.
Peter Bottoms? Why him?
Peter was our local tavern owner, and a creature as foul as the horseman himself. The man wore a permanent scowl and had his fingers in a lot of pies. Most inedible.
Martin pressed a finger to my lips to quiet me. I clutched his hand.
Martin, no, not Peter. I'd rather have dealings with Satan.
It has to be Peter, he said. Once we're away, I'll explain.
Explain now.
He loosened my grip on his hand. There's no time. Just listen. From Greenberg, Peter will take you to Sawpit. There will be a small boat waiting. The man piloting that boat will ferry you to my ship. As payment for delivering you, you're to give Peter this bracelet. Understood?
Not really. But this is simple costume jewelry. Why would he want it?
Believe me, Katrina, he does.
I examined it, running my finger over each clay rose. Intricate, but not delicate. If he wants it so badly, then what's to stop him from simply nabbing it and abandoning me on the road? Martin hesitated, his eyes heavy, then said,
Because I'll be waiting with the rest of the payment. The only way he can get it is to comply.
I twirled the bracelet on my wrist, thinking of the complexity of this scheme. It feels like I'm being smuggled.
Would you rather risk pursuit from your father?
I shook my head. My heart beat fast as I thought of what was to come. Martin, are we doing the right thing? He gazed at me like I'd lost my mind.
Katrina, there is more at stake here than living your life tied to this farm. The Hollow has become far too dangerous.
For everyone. He drew close and whispered.
I cannot save everyone, but I can save you.
Though my mind whirled with questions, I quietly nodded. He stood, looking down at me sharply.
Weigh your thoughts and decide now, because once I sail away from Sleepy Hollow, I will never return.
When I stepped inside, Simon was walking toward the door.
I was just coming out to find you, Miss Katrina. Your father's asking for you.
I hurried to his study.
Oh, good, he said, rising. There are some inconsistencies on these export registers. I need a fresh pair of eyes to look them over.
My eyes were anything but fresh, and in no way would I be able to concentrate. Can it wait until this evening?
Ichabod's coming, and I must prepare.
Ichabod won't be coming.
He tapped the ledger and went on as though that statement needed no explanation.
I feel there is some miscalculation in the tobacco column, but it could very well...
What do you mean he's not coming? It's Wednesday. He's expected. Father kept his gaze on the numbers.
Not anymore.
He ran his finger down one of the columns as though rechecking the figures, but I knew he was simply waiting for my response. There could only be one explanation. I exhaled, determined to stay calm. Why have you put a stop to it? Father exhaled his own sigh, more from impatience than surrender.
Because he did not use discretion.
His finger grew white as he pressed it to the ledger.
He made me look weak before the council.
Father? Weak? Not when his money set the rules. I can assure you, Ichabod told no one. He would never jeopardize all he'd strove for.
We'd agreed he'd teach my slaves, yet there were others from neighboring farms.
That was not his doing. Father jerked his head up.
Then whose?
I froze. Mum. I couldn't name Lita. Perhaps you should have rationalized it to the council instead of giving in. His face flushed as his eyes bored through me.
I did not give in. I simply came to realize the ridiculousness of it.
I returned his glare. It's not ridiculous.
You're right. It's not ridiculous. It's preposterous. I should have never agreed.
But he only means well, I argued.
Are you so sure?
Without a doubt.
Katrina, the council is starting to question whether Crane is a teacher or a troublemaker. He's allowing the children too much freedom and filling their heads with unorthodox thought. One child reported that he had them spend the afternoon studying ants.
Had I not been so angry, I might have smiled.
We're keeping a close eye on him.
Perhaps the council should worry more about the horsemen and less about Ichabod. He jabbed his finger down on the page again.
Perhaps you should stop arguing and come help me as I asked.
I stood stock still, considering my options. I turned and swept to the door.
Where are you going?
He called.
Out,
I said, glancing back. I will find the numerical problem when I return. He lifted his finger from the ledger and pointed it as straight as a pistol.
You are not to leave this house.
Why? Because of the danger? You're forgetting, Father. The horseman only rises at night. Or are you more afraid I might encounter Ichabod? Before he could protest further, I hurried down the hall. I spurred Dewdrop into a gallop, riding hard, the sting of the cool wind on my face. My intention had been to get away, to taste a little freedom, to breathe. But after a few minutes, I changed course, and didn't slow until the schoolhouse came into sight. The school day had ended, but Gunpowder was still tethered in front. Good. I hitched Dewdrop, then smoothed down my windblown hair. I touched my palms to my face. How must I look after that fierce ride? Rosy nose, mottled cheeks. I pushed through the door. Ichabod? The room was empty. I peeked out at Gunpowder. Then I remembered. There's a comfortable patch of clover near the water. An excellent spot to think. Of course. I hurried through the schoolyard to the old birch by the brook. Ichabod sat against it, journal and pencil in hand. His eyes were fixed to his notebook. He wrote intensely, like the words might evaporate before he could get them onto the page. I watched for a moment. Then, too, I could have watched for an hour, but secretly observing him felt a bit lewd. Ichabod, I whispered. He started as I brought him out of his trance.
Katrina!
Quickly rising, he tucked the journal and pencil into his vest pocket. How beautifully handsome he was. I touched my cheek again, worrying that I looked like a smallpox victim. He stepped closer.
You seem upset. Has something else happened?
I dropped my hand from my face. I just heard that Father has ceased the Wednesday lessons. He shrugged a shoulder.
I gave it my best. Maybe after the horseman is dealt with, he'll reconsider.
Father, don't count on it, and don't make excuses for him. Relax, Katrina.